Thanks for listening to the best of Outkick the Coverage podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the Coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
Mason Rudolph and Myles Garrett, the story that will not end. Myles Garrett finally reinstated by the NFL. What's the first thing he does? Runs and talks to ESPN about how Mason Rudolph was mean to him and called him a bad word. Let's play both of those audio. Then I'll bring in the crew. You guys can react to it out there. Hope you're having a good Friday. 877-996-6369. Let's start with Jim Crane, whose Astros, I believe, cheated their way to a World Series title, stole a championship, frankly, from the Dodgers back in 2017, may well have stolen a championship from a guy who's maybe not going to get one, Clayton Kershaw, and might have taken away a World Series MVP from him with their sign stealing. He was asked about it. He couldn't even keep his story straight for the length of a press conference. Listen.
You know, our opinion is, you know, that this didn't impact the game. We had a good team. We won the World Series, and we'll leave it at that.
Jim, when talking about the Yankees there, did you say you feel like this didn't impact the game? And what do you mean by that?
I didn't say it didn't impact the game. You know, our opinion is, you know, that this didn't impact the game.
Jim, sign stealing is a distinct advantage for the hitter. So how is it that it doesn't affect competition? So then what are you guys apologizing for?
We're apologizing because we broke the rules.
But isn't sign stealing a distinct advantage for the hitter? So doesn't it automatically impact competition?
It could possibly do that. It could possibly not.
Okay, guys, we're going to wrap up. Thank you, Dusty. Thank you, Jim.
I mean, Jim Crane, what an idiot. What an awful disaster of a press conference from the Houston Astros. The guy can't even keep his story straight for like a 10-minute press conference. The only reason you cheat is to impact the game. If you are cheating and you aren't impacting the game, you're the worst cheater ever. Like, just take this outside of the world of sports. If you are playing Uno and you look at the cards that the Uno player you're playing against has, you are cheating and you are attempting to impact the game. If you aren't smart enough to cheat in Uno, the reason why I'm bringing up Uno, by the way, is because I'm trying to teach my kids how to play. And I'm like, no, you got to keep your cards closer to your chest. I can look right over and know exactly what color cards you got. I'm never going to lose. You got to think about other people trying to cheat when you're playing games. It's why you keep your cards close to the vest. You can't trust people not to look. The Astros 100% cheated and it got them a championship. Admit it. It's easy. I think it would be easy to say, I'm 100% responsible here. My organization cheated, and explain exactly how it happened, because I'm fascinated by this. There is a line in which stealing signs is considered appropriate, and it's been going on for generations in the history of baseball. If you ever played baseball, you probably remember somebody pointing out to you, hey, when the batter's up and they're given a sign, the batter's not allowed to turn and look at the sign that the pitcher's getting from the catcher. And if he does, or if he tries to do it, the pitcher will hit him. Like, there is an ethical line. But if somebody gets to second base, a lot of times a second base runner can try and see what the signals might be and try to tell the batter. That's a part of the game. It's not a part of the game to use modern technology to figure out a way to notify the batter while he's hitting by banging on trash cans what pitches are coming. The fact that that occurred is clearly cheating. It's an evolution of a strategy that has existed for a long time, but at some point in time, I think if you put that story in front of most baseball fans, they would say, okay, a runner on second, maybe he can try to cue the batter as to what pitch is coming. That's been expected and been happening for years. It's why oftentimes they change signals when somebody is on second base. But having a video camera system and a television installed in the dugout and a beating on the trash can to notify in real time a batter what pitches are coming, that's not normal. That's cheating. I think almost everybody out there would agree. Myles Garrett lost his mind on the football field. He hit Mason Rudolph in the head with a helmet. There could have been incredibly severe issues with that. When you take a helmet, which weighs several pounds, and you are a grown man, and you swing it at another man's uncovered head, the possibility is there could be severe injury there, even including death. It's not a crazy idea. If you have somebody who is as strong as Myles Rudolph and they swing a helmet at your head, I wouldn't like the chances that you're going to be okay. Mason Rudolph, it appears, either has a super strong skull or he caught a glancing blow in that brawl. I thought the NFL got the suspension correct. When Myles Garrett suddenly realized how severe his suspension was going to be, he threw out a racism Hail Mary at the NFL's investigation into this incident, at his appeal. The NFL investigated it. They said there's no evidence corroborating his allegation at all. None of the officials on the field, none of the audio, none of the players, none of them heard Mason Rudolph say a racial slur. When you have something to gain by alleging misbehavior by someone else, I'm going to be honest with you, I tend to believe you less. Just like with Jussie Smollett. If being a victim of racism helps you, I'm less likely to believe that you are a victim of racism. Myles Garrett could be telling the truth. I think the chances of him telling the truth are low. But even if he were telling the truth, it doesn't excuse you from attacking someone. We got to go back to the tried and true lessons of most of our youth, which is sticks and stones may break your bones, but words will never hurt you. And that needs to be a rule that's applied evenly no matter what your identity is. Somebody saying something to you does not give you the right to physically assault them. We've gotten words and actions all conflated in this social media era. It's worse for a lot of people out there to say something bad on social media than it is to get a DUI. Think about that for a minute. There are a lot of you out there that would be more likely to lose your job for saying something inappropriate on Facebook or Twitter than you are for getting a DUI. I'm sorry, we've completely broken the words and actions universe when we are giving people less penalty for criminal behavior than they are for what they say on social media. It's crazy. Here's Myles Garrett.
I mean, he called me the N-word. He called me a stupid N-word. I don't say the N-word, whether it's, you know, with A, E-R. To me personally, it just shouldn't be said. And whether it's known by family, friends, anyone. And I don't want to use it because I don't want to, you know, find that appropriate around me for anyone to use.
Okay, so I actually agree with a lot of what Myles Garrett's saying there. But you're trying to tell me that you are in some way mitigating your behavior because somebody said something mean to you on the football field? I'm sorry. I'm just not willing to give anybody a pass because of what somebody says to them. So we have two different guys in the world of sports, a billionaire, Jim Crane, owner of the Houston Astros, and a multimillionaire, Myles Garrett, number one overall pick, defensive end for the Cleveland Browns, and neither one of them is just willing to accept responsibility for their actions or the actions of their employees. And that, to me, is all too reflective, unfortunately, of the society in which we live today, where people just won't say, I did it, I shouldn't have, my bad, let's move on. Because I'll tell you what, I completely forgive Myles Garrett if he came out and said, you know what, there's no excuse for my behavior, I shouldn't have done what I did, I deserve a punishment, that was stupid, I'm going to be better going forward. I'd be like, you know what, 100% Myles Garrett, I'll give you a pass. It's a forgiving society. I think most of you out there would say the same thing. Shouldn't have lost his temper. Shouldn't have behaved the way he did. Got away a little bit lucky that Mason Rudolph wasn't severely injured given what he did. But I understand it, and I'm willing to move on totally. Now, the Astros are a little bit different because I don't blame Dodger fans for being upset about this. But in general, if you own it and just walk me through the process and you say, look, we were looking for every competitive advantage we could find. We know that sign stealing has existed for a long time. We had a super smart member of our staff that started tracking pitches through Excel spreadsheets, and he figured out he could determine what the codes were and what the signals were, and that was fine for scouting purposes. But then we took it to the next step of putting a television in the dugout, of wiring and making phone calls and letting people know and hitting garbage cans, and that was unacceptable. And we crossed the line between diligent preparation for games and research and good old-fashioned scouting and cheating. And for that, we bear the responsibility of the punishments which we've been given. We deserve them, and I don't have anything to say in our defense. Boom! It's pretty well said, right? Would have been easy to accept then if you were the Astro or you were Miles Garrett. Let me bring in the crew. They haven't had a chance to talk about this yet. Danny G, I'll start with you. What do you think about both of these situations, the Astros and Miles Garrett? And do you see the connection that I'm making in which both the billionaire owner and the multimillionaire player are refusing to accept responsibility for things that they did wrong?
Yeah, I do. I think a lot of us at an early age, especially in our careers, we learn to just admit when we do something wrong. When I was a young program director, I was only 20 years old. I made a lot of mistakes. And there was one time, we talked to him a few days ago. Carl Goldman was my boss. And
the guy who stuck on the cruise ship.
Yeah. I missed a deadline. I was supposed to send this research in, and I mailed it late. When he called me on it, I made these excuses. I'll never forget that lesson. He told me, look it, if you just owned up to it, I would accept your apology. But you making excuses is not going to cut it. And the next time I screwed up on that job, I told him, hey, my bad. I'm going to do better. That's not going to happen again. And he told me, I'm glad you're learning on the job. That stuck with me my entire adult life, that when you do screw up, just own up to it, admit it. You're dead on with this take, because the Astros made things 100 times worse yesterday.
I agree.
I wish they would have just shut up. Mind. I would have rather them not say anything instead of what they did. Los Angeles is up in arms. I mean, even the TV morning shows and the TV afternoon drive shows here, which usually try to be politically correct and as unbiased as possible, underneath Altuve and Bregman and the owner of the Astro, they labeled them as the Astros cheating owner, the Astros cheating player. Like, that was the description on the TV screen underneath these guys. That tells you everything you need to know right there. And
By the way, also accurate.
Yeah, and I love what you said about teaching your kids Uno, because I was thinking about playing cards. That's how I think about this too. Okay, yeah, sign stealing has been a part of baseball forever, picking up on pitchers' tips and all of that. But using technology to do this is not okay. The baseball commissioner warned all the teams back in 2017.
Yeah, specifically
because,
about this.
Yes, because of how that Apple Watch was in one of the dugouts. They still did it. Okay, reading your poker opponent's tell is a part of poker. Using a camera to see their cards is not.
Yes.
This is not a hard concept to grasp.
What about you, Dub, when you hear both of these stories, which I think are, you know, somewhat interrelated in the way that they both are refusing to accept responsibility, and I think there'll be a lot of discussion about both. Do you see the connection?
Absolutely. Both sides in both these stories are running as fast and as far away from accepting responsibility as humanly possible. I'll start with the Astros. I mean, that has got to be the worst apology presser of all time.
So bad.
I mean, it was really almost jaw-dropping listening to the Astros owner yesterday when he was making those comments. He literally walked back and forth over his own words within seconds of each other multiple times. It was unbelievable to see. And it's like, you're sitting here, it's like, this guy's made over $1 billion in his life. I don't know how. I mean, it seems like your mock apology that you just did a couple minutes ago was about 1,000 times better than what anyone from the Astros organization put out yesterday. So I was really just in shock. Whoever their PR people,
it blows my mind.
It really is mind blowing. And then the Myles Garrett thing is, I mean, he's already gone down this road, right?
Yeah.
When it first happened. So I don't even understand the logic behind it and circling back around and saying these things again when I feel like pretty much everybody has kind of moved on from this story. And then, bam, yesterday he runs to ESPN. He basically just repeats himself from his first
excuse. Literally the minute he gets reinstated to the league, his first thought is, I'm going to go make an excuse again for what I did that the NFL has already shot down once and that, frankly, most of the American public has not bought already, and you're going to go try it again.
Yeah, it just doesn't even make sense to me that you would even double back and say that excuse another time, the same excuse you used, you know, months ago.
Yeah, it's crazy to me. And it also, again, makes both of these situations worse when it's better to say nothing at all. Like, if the Astros had just said, hey, we're going to rely on the statements that we've made already from ownership, people would have probably said, hey, you should have to answer questions. But it would have been much better for the Astros to be getting criticized for not saying anything than to have that disastrous performance like Jim Crane did yesterday. And I think the Myles Garrett thing, most people felt like, okay, the punishment's just in some way. You might have thought he should have gotten a game or two less, a game or two more. But by and large, I think the NFL pretty much got it right. And I think people would have been okay with Myles Garrett coming back week one. I certainly was. I went on and said, hey, I think the NFL got it right. I'm fine with him coming back. And the first thing you do is go run to ESPN to whine and excuse your behavior. I don't get it. Eddie, you've been doing updates a long time. You see a connection here?
Yeah, I think so. And I mean, Myles Garrett just got reinstated. He just had a meeting with the commissioner.
Yes.
And I assume he said all the right things for them to reinstate him. And then the next day, or maybe the same day, I mean, I assume they had to record this interview. I mean, maybe beforehand, they didn't just do it and then completely turn it around and put it on SportsCenter. I don't know. But the next day, he's basically bringing this all out again. I would love to have heard Roger Goodell's reaction when someone told him, oh, by the way, there's this interview that's going to be big news coming out and people are going to be talking about it. Myles Garrett bringing this whole situation up again.
Do you guys agree with me too? And I think this is a big part of one of the challenges we have is everybody wants to be treated differently based on their identity now. Right? And I see this happen all the time. If you watch television and you watch like somebody come on as an expert, they oftentimes now want to say their identity before they give their opinion. Like you'll see it all the time. Somebody will be like, as a Hispanic, transgender, atheist, I believe. And my thing is, why do you need to preface your opinion by telling me your identity? I don't care about any of that. Your opinion is either a good one, which is supported by facts, or it isn't. What you look like is not going to dictate whether I believe that you're making a good argument or not.
Why do you even need an identity?
Yeah, right. This is why justice is blind in the ideal world, right? If you think about Lady Justice, like weighing the scales of justice, in an ideal world, she is blind. And so she's sitting there listening to the evidence and trying to weigh guilt or innocence. But the analogy that I would make is this is attempting to use something that you don't control at all as an identity to justify your opinion, i.e. you're trying to put more weight on your opinion based on your identity. And so this is to me like back in the day in like olden times, somebody who was like an earl or a king or a, you know, like whatever title gentry you were in ancient Europe, people would say, and they still have like the title. If you look up like Prince William's official title is like, I mean, it's incredible. It's like the fourth Duke Earl of Northumberland, you know, and all these different titles. And people used to say that before they would decree something, right? The proclamation would be like, your King Geoffrey, the Lion-hearted 46th, you know, like all this long list of encomiums of incredible accomplishments and titles that you own. And then it would be like, says that you have to pay taxes, right? And all of that title was the justification to lead you to believe that you needed to pay taxes, right? It seems to me that our new royalty in this country, and I think it's totally broken, is your identity. And people want to argue that based on that identity, they should be treated differently. And my thing is, society doesn't work if we have different rules for different people based on what they look like or what they worship or anything else. Now, I'm not saying the country has been perfect, certainly historically, at this. But the idea that you should be treated differently based on some sort of identity or characteristics, be it race, sexuality, religion, ethnicity, is crazy to me. Absolutely and utterly crazy. But that's a lot of the arguments that I hear these days. I think we need the opposite. And this is what time, oftentimes, I think, one, it's why the show does so well. Because I think there's a lot of people who are craving, just people being treated evenly. And I think what upsets people, who are my critics by and large, is if you go look at what I say over the course of my entire career on the radio, which is, you know, a lot of words now, or the millions of words that I have written, there is a consistency to it. I apply pretty evenly the same rules regardless of wealth, regardless of gender, regardless of religion, regardless of race. And that upsets people who want to be treated differently based on those things, right? There is a consistency and a legitimacy to it because I almost think of myself as trying to write opinions like a judge would. And if you go to law school and you study the law at all, you learn that precedent matters. And so I want my precedents to be consistent. And I'm always constantly thinking about that. And judges do the same thing. Because you can't adjust the law every time based on the defendant that's in front of you or the particular case that's in front of you. And very few people are able to do that because it's hard, because you have to think about all the other opinions you've had before and put them into the same context. And that's like, for instance, when I went on CNN and I was jokingly saying, like, I believe in the First Amendment and boobs. Like, I'm a First Amendment absolutist. And I will defend people's right to say whatever they want to say. Doesn't mean I don't think there should be consequences sometimes for what you say, but all of my logic is the same. And so I want to circle back around. It seems like it's a crazy thing to say, but it's so eminently reasonable. Our standards here have to be the same no matter what, right? Like, you can't allow Myles Garrett to say, oh, somebody said something really offensive to me, and so that explains why I attacked him. No. The standard here is words can't lead to you attacking people. It doesn't matter what your background is. That's a standard that should be evenly applied to every person in America, regardless of their identity or their background. Do you guys agree with that? Is that a crazy thing to say?
No, not crazy at all.
And I bet I'm the only person on Sports Talk Radio who will say it today.
Yeah, other people are going to be scared to have this full conversation.
Right? Dub, Eddie, do you guys disagree? I mean, like, there's going to be nobody else who will say this, but, like, Myles Garrett is trying to excuse himself. I think the standard that needs to be set by everybody is mom, dad, whoever you are, teaching kids, you can't allow anybody's words to lead to you physically assaulting them, period. And if you do, you have to bear the consequences of that behavior, and you can't excuse that behavior by saying, oh, somebody said something mean to me. Like, our conflation of words and actions in society today, the example I gave of people getting fired because of tweets or Facebook messages and keeping their jobs when they get DUIs, like, it's crazy to me that I'm in more danger of losing my job over a tweet that I send than over getting a DUI. And a lot of you would be the same. If you have to choose, do you want your kid to send a inappropriate tweet or do you want them to drive drunk? Every single person on the planet listening to us right now would be like, I'd rather him send an inappropriate tweet. I hope they don't. I hope they don't say something stupid on Facebook. I hope they don't record themselves doing something dumb on Snapchat. But if I had to choose for what my kids were going to do, I'd choose them to do something stupid on social media instead of driving drunk. And I'm just picking driving drunk as an example because I think everybody out there is like, yeah, that's something you shouldn't do. Yet our society oftentimes is punishing people more for social media posts than they are for actual crimes. Got me fired up. I think we're going to talk. Who do we got next? Do we talk to John Morosi here?
Yeah, perfect timing.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
We bring in now our Major League Baseball insider, John Morosi, J-O-N-M-O-R-O-S-I, and boy, the timing on this is fantastic. Baseball season back. And what did you think of the Houston Astros performance yesterday, John Morosi? It seemed to me like they made the story so much bigger and so much worse than it already was.
Clay, my friend, it was not one of those days to just appreciate the subtle pop of the glove and the crack of the bat during batting practice, right? It was a little more a little more controversial than that. You're right. I had a number of issues with the way that it played out. To me, there was not enough thought done in advance about at least conveying to the public a degree of full accountability and sincerity about what had transpired. I was impressed by Carlos Correa, who offered at least some detail in terms of timing and how they did it and the origins of this process, and even took responsibility for not speaking up more and really said, hey, Carlos Beltran's seniority at the time should not have basically compelled all of us to stay silent on this. And so I think Carlos's comments were well taken, but in general, the rather scripted nature of the other apologies and the lack of specifics, and most of all, Clay, the lack of acknowledging the connection between the cheating and the championship. It just made it really difficult to put a lot of credibility in what they were saying, and from my perspective, opens up continued criticism at an even higher level during the course of the year than what would have been the case if the apology had been thorough and authentic from the outset.
Here's the question I have, and I think this is a big one that is starting to happen in a lot of different sports. Throughout the history of baseball, teams have tried to steal the signals of other, of catchers to go into pitchers, right? Especially when there's a runner on second base.
Right.
Now we have a modern day technology that is different. Where is the line move between acceptable gamesmanship and cheating? I think almost everyone out there listening to us right now would agree that the Astros were on the side of cheating. But where is the line? I mean, is that part of the challenge here in general? I don't think there's any doubt, again, that the Astros were past it. But is an Excel spreadsheet, when you're studying, the pitching tendencies and everything else, and using that for scouting, I think it's probably okay. Is it just within the game itself, allowing there to be technology in the dugout other than maybe a phone that allows you to call the bullpen? You just can't have anything else and you have to monitor that?
Right, and that to me is what baseball is confronted with. There is a line. That line is you are not to use technology to decode in-game, real-time,
yes,
sign-stealing efforts. That is not what you are allowed to do during baseball. However, if you're watching the previous start, let's say, and a veteran player, upon looking at video, said, oh my gosh, I was looking at
there's a pitch tell
last start.
Here. Yeah, like when he's going to throw a fastball,
and
he puts his hand this way. Yeah.
When he's throwing a fastball, he's got his glove up around his ear, and when he's throwing a curveball, he's got his glove around the letters on his jersey. It's kind of hard to tell a team to not review video of the previous game, and if something jumps out at you, that you would then use that as a potential advantage in the next game. That should be fine, and I think there have been for the recent years, Clay, iPads in the dugout that only include historical video and data, and not the data of the current game being played. So that has also been one element.
Which,
of
by the
control.
Way, just not to cut you off, but is different than, let's say, the NFL, which has iPads on the sideline and allows quarterbacks, for instance, and players to go on the sideline and look at what the defenses are doing, right? Like, that is a technological innovation that football has been okay with, and I don't think most people out there listening right now would say, okay, there's nothing wrong with looking at, all 22 vision of what the defense is doing against you during the course of the game. Football has adjusted in that way. Baseball is saying, basically, we're not even going to allow you to do that.
Well, and I think that the football analog, and I'd be interested to know, Clay, on this, is what do you ever have teams that, that have a camera that are studying the sign sequences coming in from the offensive coordinator, the backup quarterback, and everybody else over there, and are then decoding them and in any way sort of relaying them to the
field?
Yeah,
it's a good question. I think in the NFL they would say that that has been taken away because the quarterback and the defensive player have the you know helmet that has the
helmet,
audio.
The helmet.
So you can usually, like, somebody's got the big play sheet, and still sometimes they'll hold the play sheet up over their mouth if you notice, like, a head coach on the sideline. But in general, I mean, I've wondered, for instance, do they zoom in on the play sheet? You know, like in some way. But I think the answer would be, well, you can probably tell what plays they're running just by watching the film itself. But I think in general, in the wake of this Astro press conference, there's a pretty consistent feeling that the Astros have not been punished severely, I would say, according to most Major League Baseball fans. Do you get that sense as well?
A lot of fans want more of a penalty. I think that for them, and it's interesting, Clay. For them, I really think that the need and desire for there to be more punishment is linked to what I believe to be a rather incomplete apology.
Yeah.
And it was even said yesterday by Astros owner Jim Crane that yes, this occurred, but it did not, I'm paraphrasing here, it did not effectively help them win games.
Yeah.
And that to me is just, there's no logic there.
Yes.
Of course it helped them. And there's a penalty here because it helped them. And it's almost as though the groundswell of support from fans, I'm sure many of them in Los Angeles, many of them in New York, teams that lost to the Astros in recent playoffs, are saying correctly that because of the lack of really taking ownership of this in a full way and saying, yeah, the 2017 title is tainted, I think that many of those fans are saying that because the Astros don't seem to quite grasp or at least publicly take ownership of the fact that it's tainted, then I think that is part of the reason why they have urged MLB to try to take away the title in a more objective and punitive manner.
We're talking to John Morosi, Major League Baseball insider. I think also the decision to give immunity to the players strikes a lot of people wrong. This is probably the last question that I'm going to be able to get to you.
Yeah.
All these players knew they were cheating going on, and they're going to escape all censure for it completely. That, I think, strikes a lot of people as unfair also. Was it the right decision by Major League Baseball to give immunity to the players?
It was, Clay. It's a hard thing for me to say, but I believe it was for them to be able to at least arrive at a conclusion as to what transpired, to get full information. I think without immunity, it would have been a very incomplete investigation that did not yield enough specifics to really arrive at a fair conclusion and fair punishment for those involved. I do think that, and this is one of my other issues about what was said yesterday, Astros owner Jim Crane saying this was not a failure of the players, it was a failure of their leaders. And yes, in that case, Jeff Luhnow and A.J. Hinch were suspended and dismissed, but the players are the best in the world at what they do. They have played baseball their whole lives, and more than anything else, they should have a pretty good idea of what's right and wrong. And that to me is one of the other issues here is that not giving the players themselves enough agency over their own culture. And that needs to be, I think, addressed for the sport going forward. What kind of culture do you want to have as a sport and as individual 30 teams? And how do the rules support and the practices support your belief on players and their own agency about what's right and wrong, candidly? That should not be a nuanced discussion. So I understand, Clay, why they were given immunity. I would have, in a perfect world, could you have seen discipline for the players? Yes. But I understand here why that was not the case, and I think overall the commissioner did a pretty good job.
John Morosi, I'm Outkick on Fox Sports Radio.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
I encourage you to go download the podcast. Make sure you don't miss anything. January was the biggest podcast month ever for the show. I hope the same will be true in February, even though it's a short month, and even though I'm out next week. I'm headed down to Mexico with my family. And so I'm excited to get away for a little bit, first break since football season really started. So we're going to get down there for a little bit. But in the meantime, we've got two different stories that we are tracking to start off your Friday. The Houston Astros finally met the media, and it did not go well. And Myles Garrett finally gets reinstated, and what's the first thing he does? He runs to ESPN to complain about Mason Rudolph and explain why he decided to assault Mason Rudolph with his helmet. There was a racial slur, according to Myles Garrett, which is a story that has already been told as an attempt, a racism Hail Mary, as it were, to limit Myles Garrett's suspension in the first place. We'll unpack both of these. We will open up your phones here on the show, 877-996-6369. No guests for the final hour. We'll break down both these stories and have some fun with you. By the way, it's Valentine's Day. For all you knuckleheads out there starting off your day, you're like, oh, no. Yeah, it's Valentine's Day, February 14th. Your girl, your wife, your side chick, they're all going to expect something. If you're a woman, pretty much can get away with just sleeping with your man. I'll be honest with you. You don't have to get him any kind of present. If you're a man, it doesn't work. You got to get a present. So if it's Valentine's Day and you still haven't done anything, you blew it. Good luck trying to get into a restaurant tonight, you knucklehead. It's Friday. You're going to see dudes all over America today. All over America. With that angry girl with them, walking in a restaurant, trying to get a table. I'm telling y'all, you know it's going to be. This is actually be a good television show. I'd like to watch it. Guys in their car, driving all over the place. Didn't even get me a reservation at Applebee's. You can't even get me an Applebee's on Valentine's Day. That's what's going to be happening. You're telling me that you love me, and you can't even get us a table at Chili's? You expect for me to want to spend the rest of my life with you, and you can't even get me in a Longhorn Steakhouse on Valentine's Day? I want a Bloomin' Onion, and Outback Steakhouse is too full because your dumbass couldn't actually make a reservation anywhere? I'm not even asking for you to get a reservation at a non-chain restaurant. I'm just asking you to have at least thought ahead to the point where we can actually get in a restaurant. Because it's Friday and it's Valentine's Day, and if you're trying to get into a restaurant, it ain't happening. So all the dudes out there that made reservations that are actually sitting at the table with their girl, when you walk in with your girl and you're like, hey, you got any availability table for two? No. No, they don't. Hey, babe, you mind if we sit at the bar? You got any places at the bar? Can we go sit at the corner of the bar? Maybe we got some dude in between us. We're going to get some drinks. I mean, maybe that guy will move. Hey, can you scoot over? Some of y'all are laughing right now, but this is going to be a large percentage of the OutKick audience is going to be walking into Outback Steakhouse like, hey, man, can we get that Bloomin' Onion? Do you mind if we stand here, babe? Man, look, I mean, there's room at the end of this bar. I'm sorry I didn't get a table, but we can stand here. I mean, I got you a Bloomin' Onion. I don't know what else you want. There's a lot of men going to be trying to make that argument tonight. There's a lot. There's a huge percentage of men. And if you work at a restaurant, you know what I'm talking about too. You got that side-eye look from the girl at the counter. It's always the girl at the counter who's in charge of the tables. Yeah, hey, what's the wait? 4 hours and 30 minutes. 4 hours and 30 minutes at the Olive Garden? Yeah, 4 hours and 30 minutes at the Olive Garden tonight. Because every man who cares about his woman actually made a reservation, and your dumbass didn't. That's what's going to happen. Did you have a reservation, Danny G, tonight?
Didn't need one. Pro tip, this is one of the nights to stay away from the restaurants. I told the girl I'm dating, I'm going to cook a
nice... Oh, that is a vet move.
OG move. There's
going
to be
another one is
on
going out. By the way, I should have given this tip earlier. Candles on the table, good move. Yep. Another good move, go out February 13th. Baby, I love you so much. I want to celebrate Valentine's the day before Valentine's. Boom. That's a good move, too. It's not going to be as crowded. We'll have more space.
Yep.
Be a better restaurant, better atmosphere. It's like trying to go out on New Year's Eve. It never goes well. Always over plan, under deliver. That's what happens on New Year's Eve. Valentine's, same thing. Dub, do you have a girl?
not for the moment. And by the way, this reminded me, we're almost upon the 1 year anniversary of me showing up here drunk. That was the day after Valentine's Day last year.
What did you do on Valentine's Day last year?
I went to a Preds game with one of my buddies and got absolutely wasted.
And so you just stayed up all night and then showed in still drunk, or did you go to bed, wake up still drunk?
No, I went down to Printer's Alley, and next thing I knew, it was 4 in the morning, so I came to work.
That's very good. We run a tight ship here, obviously.
Good memories.
Unlike the Astros and Miles Garrett, I'm willing to, you know, be honest with my mistakes.
You owned up to your mistakes.
I owned up to my mistakes.
Eddie, what are you doing for Valentine's?
We are going out to dinner to our favorite Mexican restaurant, but we're going at 3 o'clock.
Are you really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's such a fantastic move. So, do you have a reservation at 3 o'clock?
No, but I really don't think it'll
What percentage
problem.
Of our audience are dudes right now who were just laughing nervously because they realize they haven't made a reservation yet? Like, you know this happens, right? Like, there are going to be so many guys out there
yep.
in the car with their girls, driving around to multiple places, asking how long the wait is on Valentine's to try to get in.
Clay, I was inside a Target in Los Angeles yesterday afternoon. I did my shopping on Amazon Prime a couple of weeks ago, but I just needed a couple of, you know, small additions to what I'm giving my girl. But you should have saw the guys walking around the aisles that had already been torn through like a week ago. Nothing, I swear, nothing left on the shelf except remnants of old Reese's Pieces packages that were opened. And so someone just tossed it on the shelf. It looked like a war zone in the two aisles for Valentine's Day gifts. There were guys milling around, scratching their heads. I could tell they were.
It was like the Valentine's Walking Dead.
Yeah. They had anxiety all over their face. They
I know like there are going to be dudes today who are like, hey, what's that code again? It happens every year. What's that rose code you got for me? That 1-800-Flowers? I did it for 2 weeks. I told you for 2 weeks all you had to do was go put in the code OUTKICK and you could have had this stuff taken care of. Hey, man, that you know the shipping's really expensive? Yeah, if you get shipping the day before or the day of, it's really expensive. Go figure. I would watch a reality show about angry women in the passenger seat while men drive around on Valentine's Day to try to get into restaurants because they didn't make a reservation. And it's even worse because it's Friday. Because it's a weekend Valentine's Day, which means, you know, everybody goes out on Friday and Saturday anyway. So the odds of you just being able to walk into a restaurant and sit down at a table, there are a lot of dudes sweating right now. They're like, oh no.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
We got only a few more minutes. We got a bunch of you who still want to weigh in, so be fast with me. I'll finish off the week with your calls. Who you got, Dub?
All right, we got Benton in Nashville.
What you got for me, my man?
Hey, good. I was at Lifetime in Franklin last night, and somebody was talking about Galentine's Day. Said it was the perfect time to pick up girls because they go out in single conglomerates. And it was the perfect time to take a girl home. Have you ever heard of Galentine's Day?
Well, I think there's a thanks for the call. There's definitely a lot of girls who go out sad because they don't have a date on Valentine's Day. So if you're a single man, maybe you can take advantage of that. But I think also there's a I don't know. Yes, in general. Let me keep moving. Who's up next?
Robert in New York.
Robert in New York. What you got for me?
Yeah, Clay, I think it might just be possible where he's put himself in a situation where he can't take that comment back. He kind of used that excuse that a racial slur was used as a way to try to lessen the impact of his actions from us, the fans, from you, the media, and more importantly, from the NFL as a way to justify the way he acted.
Right, but then thanks for the call. But then you don't have to do a sit-down interview with ESPN. That's my point. Like, he's already made that allegation. It's been refuted by the NFL. They said there's no evidence to support it. It's been denied by Mason Rudolph, and every other player who was on the field has said they didn't hear anything. So if that's all the case, you've made that allegation. It's been refuted largely. Why do you need to remake the allegation again in a sit-down interview? So I'm talking about Miles Garrett, like, just move on. And it's a really bad decision. Like, I don't know who advises these owners, these players. Again, that's why I think I could kill it with Clay Travis PR. Who's up next?
Victor in L.A.
Victor, what you got?
Hey, I just want to say that with the cheating scandal and everything, as a Yankee or as a Dodger, as especially Clayton Kershaw, this is a very moral question. It's a difficult question. What do you take away from this? What do you do from this point forward? Like, if you're Clayton Kershaw, what do you take away? What's the best way to... for you to look at this and handle it. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I think Major League Baseball just has to start policing in an aggressive way the use of technology in the dugouts. And I think that's the biggest issue that you can take away from this, is that you can't have televisions, can't have cell phones, can't have Apple Watches. You can't have anything other, probably from a technological perspective, in the course of the game other than a phone to allow you to communicate with the dugout. And I think you have to police that from both player and coach perspective. Who's up next?
Obi in L.A.
Obi, what you got for me, my man?
Good morning and happy Valentine's Day.
Hey, appreciate that. Same to you.
In terms of Myles Garrett, now, understanding that I'm not justifying anything you said, but if that conversation was supposed to be in confidence, does the NFL have any fault for making that public?
Well, we don't know. You're talking about in the initial appeal process?
Correct. In other words, supposedly he said that that wasn't supposed to go public, and somehow the NFL went public.
Right. But my assumption is, yeah, it's a good call. My assumption is, anytime something goes public like that, who benefits? Certainly Mason Rudolph didn't benefit. Certainly the NFL didn't benefit. So it seems to me that that was something that went public from somebody associated with Myles Garrett in an effort to lessen the punishment for Myles Garrett. Because nobody else benefits at all from that allegation going public, right? If you're trying to track down like why a story is out there and it involves multiple parties, usually the person who benefits the most is typically responsible for it getting out there. Not always, but usually. And that's what I would say there. I think Myles Garrett's camp leaked it. Who's up next?
All right, last one here. We got Tim in Fort Lauderdale.
Tim, got to be fast for me. What you got?
Hey, Clay, Valentine's Day, 56 years old, with the same woman 30 years. This holiday is for all the young folks, dating, engaged, you know, they're their sweetheart. My wife and I got just as frustrated trying to go out to dinner on Valentine's Day, the old switcheroony on the menus, trying to get in a restaurant. We do it the weekend before, the weekend after. I don't love her any more on Valentine's. I don't love her any less on Valentine's. It's just my sweetheart every day. And coincidentally, I tell everybody I outkicked my coverage when I got her.
Yeah, good for you. I hope everybody out there is outkicking their coverage on Valentine's Day. But if you are a guy and you don't have a restaurant reservation right now, you might need to try a Hail Mary. You might need to throw out an idea. Baby, we're going away next week. You better plan a vacation in a hurry. You better. I didn't want to do anything to get us too complicated on Valentine's. We're going away for next weekend. I already took care of it all, and you better take care of it all today. That's a Hail Mary. Might work for you. Might not. But that's a play that could potentially work.
Did you tell your wife you're going to take her on vacation next week?
Next week? We're leaving tomorrow. Going to Mexico. Happy Valentine's, baby. You, me, and the three kids. We're going down to the Caribbean.
Your vacation is her gift.
That's right. We're going out to a movie with the kids tonight, all five of us. Well, let's be honest. Living with me is its own Valentine's every single day. I am Clay Travis. This is Outkick the Coverage. I appreciate all of you for hanging out with us. Download the podcast. Don't miss anything. I'll be back after a week off. I'm headed to Mexico. This is Outkick on Fox Sports Radio.